Hi, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a PGY1, a recent PGY1. And today's episode, this will be the 35th episode of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And today we're going to finish up the antibiotics. I'm going to talk about the antifungals and the antiparasitic medications. This should be a relatively short podcast. So, for the antifungals, right? Basically, fungi have cell walls and cell membranes. The cell walls, they are made of chitin and glucan. And there's a big high-yield enzyme you want to know that helps with making fungal cell walls. So again, not cell membrane, fungal cell walls. Okay, the cell wall enzyme you want to know is beta-D glucan synthase. Beta-D glucan synthase. And then, if you want to make a fungal cell membrane, you need a cholesterol derivative known as ergosterol. And there are many steps in this synthesis pathway, but there is probably only two that you need to know for exams. So what are those two? The first step you want to know about for exams is a person going from squalene to lanosterol. That's done by an enzyme known as squalene epoxidase. So squalene epoxidase acts on squalene. And then going from lanosterol to ergosterol with the enzyme 14-alpha-demethylase, okay? So lanosterol to ergosterol with 14-alpha-demethylase. So if you created a drug that inhibited squalene epoxidase or 14-alpha-demethylase, you could cure fungal infections. So first off, let's talk about the cell wall inhibitors. The first cell wall inhibitor I'll talk about are the drug class known as the echinocandins. So candin should already tell you that these drugs work well for candida, okay? So, the cell wall inhibitors, the echinocandins, they inhibit that beta-D glucan synthase enzyme that helps with making the cell wall. And basically, these drugs, they all end in fungin, right? So, like caspofungin, mycofungin, and edulafungin, you basically use these all for invasive candidal infections. So, that's it with the cell wall inhibitors. For the cell membrane inhibitors, like I said, you want to inhibit squalene epoxidase. That was the first enzyme I mentioned in going from squalene to lanosterol. And the drug that does this is terbinafine. Terbinafine, classically on exams, use it for nail fungus, right? So onychomycosis. And I'll just go ahead and say one thing. This is probably more relevant for step two, but it may be an unusual step one question. But if a person has tinea capitis, right? So like head fungus or nail fungus, you never use topical stuff. Topical stuff will always be the wrong answer on exams. You always want to use the oral stuff, like the systemic antifungals, usually like terbinafine, or you could also give like oral griseofulvin. Now, the second enzyme I said could be inhibited is 14-alpha-demethylase. That's what's inhibited by the azoles, okay? Remember, that's the enzyme, again, that converts lanosterol to ergosterol. So the big high-yield drugs you want to know about here, there's ketoconazole, okay? Ketoconazole, its primary mechanism of action is, like I said, it inhibits 14-alpha-demethylase. But there's some other high-yield stuff with ketoconazole, right? It also inhibits desmolase, okay? Remember, that's one of the enzymes that helps you convert cholesterol to many things in the synthesis of stuff in the adrenal glands, okay? So like synthesizing androgens, mineralocorticoids, glucocorticoids. And also, don't forget that this is the enzyme that's actually activated by ACTH as well. So this is why you can use ketoconazole to actually treat Cushing syndrome, right? So an over-secretion of cortisol. If you inhibited the big enzyme that helps with synthesis of all that fun stuff, desmolase. Ketoconazole, right? Remember that crack amigos mnemonic we talked about in a prior podcast? So hopefully that helps you remember that ketoconazole is also a cytochrome P450 inhibitor. That's the K in crack amigos. And then it has anti-androgen effects. The big thing I'll just say to remember here is that it inhibits multiple enzymes in the androgen synthesis pathway, so it can actually cause a gynecomastia and like decrease libido, for example. And actually, there is a mnemonic you'll learn about as you study for step one for the drugs that classically cause gynecomastia, and the mnemonic is STACKED, like STACKED. I'll let you think about why that mnemonic makes sense. But the S stands for spironolactone, okay? The T stands for THC, right? So like marijuana. The A, I believe, stands for alcohol. So if you use alcohol chronically, that can cause a hyperestrogenism because it impairs the functioning of your liver. So the person can get gynecomastia with that. The C is for cimetidine. Remember, that's the H the H, is it one or two? I believe it's a H2 blocker that also has anti-androgen effects, so it can cause gynecomastia. Ketoconazole, as I mentioned, estrogens, obviously, and then digoxin. Okay, remember that sodium potassium ATPase inhibitor. Hopefully, I'll have some time to do a cardiopharma podcast series of podcasts, and we'll talk about digoxin. So other azoles, right, there's fluconazole, miconazole, there's itraconazole. This is another one that shows up quite often on exams, right? It's usually the right answer in terms of treatment of like dimorphic fungal infection like cocci or histo or blasto, okay? But another high yield unusual thing that may be an unusual exam question is you can actually use itraconazole in HIV prophylaxis, especially in patients that live in susceptible areas, right? So you can use it to prophylax against cocci. If a person lives, for example, in Nevada or California or West Texas, blah, 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 you can prophylax if your CD4 count is less than 250. But for histo, if a person, again, lives in a susceptible area like Kentucky, for example, you can prophylax against histo at a CD4 count less than 150 with itraconazole. So itraconazole, CD4 less than 250, susceptible area, cover cocci. CD4 count less than 150, AIDS patient, susceptible area, histoplasmosis, cover with itraconazole. And then another azole is voriconazole. The only way I've seen this tested commonly on exams is in the context of aspergillus. So they can describe a person that has like a fungus ball in their lungs or a person that has a CGD. Remember, aspergillus is catalase positive, right? So people with CGD get recurrent infections with catalase positive organisms, okay? Voriconazole is very good at covering aspergillus. And then the last set of antifungals I'll talk about are the things that just bind to ergosterol and basically make holes in the fungal cell wall. This is where we have like fungal cell membrane. So these are drugs like amphotericin B, aka amphoterable, and nystatin, right? So amphotericin B, basically, I've mentioned the mechanism of action. You essentially use this for any life-threatening fungal infection. Like if a person has like cryptococcal meningitis, classic AIDS patient, India ink stain showing like the soap bubble sign. You can cover cryptococcal meningitis with amphoterable and flucytosine, okay? Although in this case, you actually have to give it intrathecally to the spinal cord because amphob actually cannot cross the blood-brain barrier very well. And also classically on exams, amphob is what you want to give for mucormycosis, right? So if you describe a diabetic patient with like facial infection and like headache, or like sinus pain, think about mucormycosis. Classically, it's from Rhizopus on exams. Now, amphoterable is a phenomenal drug. It cures most, if not every, fungal infection, but it is severely nephrotoxic. And there are certain things you could do to prevent this nephrotoxicity, right? You can hydrate the patient like a ton, or you can actually give the liposomal formulation of amphotericin B. It's actually relatively safe, at least better than the straight up amphoterable. And then nystatin. Nystatin has the same mechanism of action. Classically on exams, it's used to treat oral candidiasis. Okay, you can use it as a swish and swallow. It's not reabsorbed in the GI tract, so not a huge issue. If I'm not mistaken, actually, nystatin is actually a little more toxic than amphotericin B, but it's not reabsorbed, so it doesn't cause much of an issue. And actually, I lied when I said we'll be talking about the last fungal drug class. There's probably like two more I need to talk about, although it's very little. There's flucytosine, okay? So if you go back to your cell biology, right, the difference between cytosine and uracil is an amino group. Uracil does not have an amino group. Cytosine does have an amino group. So if you remove the amino group from cytosine, boom, you formed uracil. So it so happens that 5-flucytosine is a fungal drug. And actually the way it works is that cytosine deaminase will convert the 5-flucytosine to 5-fluorouracil. So basically you're making an anti-cancer drug in the body. And then that 5-FU inhibits thymidylate synthase. And that is actually how 5-flucytosine works as an antifungal. And again, because it's an anti-cancer drug, basically, it can suppress the bone marrow, so that's one classic side effect. But the big thing you want to remember of 5-fluocytosine is you can use it to treat cryptococcal meningitis. And then the last fungal drug is Griseofulvin, right? So Griseofulvin basically works like the vinca alkaloid, right? Remember, your vinca alkaloids prevent polymerization of microtubules. Although the mechanism of action of Griseofulvin is it's a little shaky, but just sort of take that for your exam. Sort of works like vinca alkaloids, prevents polymerization of microtubules. Remember, this is also how colchicine works. Colchicine also works by preventing microtubule polymerization. And don't forget, remember the mnemonic Guinness Coronas and PBRs induce chronic alcoholism. Griseofulvin is actually an activator of cytochrome P450. So that's just one of those things. It's an inducer. So you want to go ahead and keep that in mind. And then, so it's a microtubule inhibitor. It's very good at accumulating in tissues that are rich in keratin. Okay, so that's why we use it to treat like dermatophyte infections. And you want to know your classic bugs that cause dermatophyte infections, like all your tinea's, right? There's three of them that they classically test on exams. There's microsporum, there is trichophyton, and there is epidermophyton. Okay, so like microsporum, epidermophyton, and trichophyton. Okay. So now let's talk about the antiparasitics. I'll probably spend like 2 minutes on this. These drugs, I am not going to discuss the mechanism of action because it offers probably like zero yield on exams. So you just need to know bug, drug that covers it. So I'll just run through this real quick. This is very good flashcard material. So the first drug I'll talk about is Primaquine. Remember, it's used to treat Plasmodium infections, right? Especially P. vivax and P. ovale. Remember, those have like hypnozoid stages that can lead dormant in the liver and cause a malaria reactivation. So you can cover that hypnozoid phase with Primaquine. You'll probably want to avoid Primaquine in a patient with a G6PD deficiency because Primaquine is actually a powerful oxidizing agent. So it can mess with that glutathione system. Now, the next drugs I'll talk about, there's Chloroquine, Atovaquone, Proguanil, Artemether lumefantrine. So again, Chloroquine, Atovaquone, Proguanil, Artemether lumefantrine. You can use these to treat malaria. Don't forget that Atovaquone plus clindamycin is actually one potential option for prophylaxis in a patient that has a HIV against a pneumocystis jervetzi when the CD4 counter goes below 200. Next drug, sodium stibogluconate. Use this to treat leishmaniasis. So sodium stibogluconate, leishmaniasis, nifurdimox, and benznidazole. You can actually use those to cover Trypanosomal cruzii. Okay, remember, T. cruzii causes big everything. It can cause achalasia, so big esophagus. It can cause a dilated cardiomyopathy, so big heart. It can cause a big GI tract because it can cause Hirschsprung's disease. It can destroy your albax and Meissner's plexi. And then the next drugs are Suramin and Melasoprol. These actually cover Trypanosomal brucei, right? That's the African sleeping sickness. Those can be covered with Suramin and Melasoprol. And then Praziquantel and your Benazols. You can actually use that to treat like a lot of tapeworm infections, a lot of fluke infections. So your Benazols, right? Albendazole, Thiabendazole, Mebendazole, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Selenium sulfide, the big thing you want to remember is that it covers Malassezia furfur. Remember the spaghetti and meatballs appearance on microscopy. Lindane was actually previously used to treat scabies, but on exams, this will always be the wrong answer because it's neurotoxic. It causes like seizures, so they don't use it anymore. If the patient has scabies, so usually they'll say finger webs, has all these like nasty stuff, very itchy person, usually a person like pretty bad hygiene. Go ahead and give permethrin. Topical permethrin is the drug of choice on exams for treating scabies, not lindane. Lindane causes seizures. Now, the next drugs I'll talk about are paromomycin and nitazoxanide. So paromomycin and nitazoxanide, those cover Cryptosporidium parvum, okay? So think about a HIV patient that has watery diarrhea, and they say, oh, you do a stool, whatever, and you find acid fast oocysts in the stool. If you find that, think about C. parvum, Cryptosporidium, not Cryptococcus, Cryptosporidium. You cover that with nitazoxanide and paromomycin. Although don't forget that nitazoxanide can actually also cover Entamoeba histolytica, although you can use metronidazole for that as well. Remember the get gap on the metro, the E in get gap stands for Entamoeba histolytica. Remember, that's like the hyoprotozoal infection that presents as a bloody diarrhea and can also present with liver lesions. Now, ivermectin, the big thing to remember here is that it covers Strongyloides, Stercoralis, and you can also use it for Onchocerca volvulus. So ivermectin, just Strongyloides and Onchocerciasis, those can be covered with ivermectin. And then palivizumab, ribavirin, I already talked about this. Palivizumab, you use it to cover RSV. Ribavirin, remember, it inhibits RNA polymerase and also inhibits inosine monophosphate dehydrogenase. Okay, so you can use that for hep C, you can use that for RSV as well. And then one other like weird antibiotic I just never mentioned is fidaxomicin. You can use it as a third line for C. diff. Usually for C. diff, you try metro first, metronidazole. That doesn't work, you can consider oral vancomycin, not IV, oral vancomycin. And then if that doesn't work, you could consider fidaxomicin. That doesn't work, then you're probably looking at a fecal transplant. Okay, so you basically transplant poop. So thank you for walking along with me with this journey through antibiotics. So we're done with the antibacterials, the antifungals, the antiparasitics, and the antivirals. If you know this information, you should be good to go on micropharmacology for any board exam. So I wish you all the best. If you ever have any questions, feel free to drop me a line, and I will see you in the next podcast. Thank you and God bless.